Ready?
I come here tonight before you because I want to belie the phrase that you can't shine a turd. All right? I'm Tom Carley, and I'm an alcoholic. And as I will have it, my sobriety date is 12/15/67. And I look forward every week to being able to come here on Monday night. I have a little trouble walking down, up and down stairs now. So this meeting being here is just really very comfortable for me. And the people here are the same as all the people in AA. They all love me, and I love them. And I know this, that if you stay, nothing but good things will happen. And you know that there isn't a person in this room that will lie to you about AA. They may lie about other things. I mean, I lie to my wife all the time. But you're allowed to do that. That's perfectly all right. But nobody in here will ever lie to you about AA because it is too sacred to us. You know, Kevin asked Pete how he stayed 3 years. I'll tell you how Pete stayed 3 years, because he involved himself in AA. You never see Pete that he's not helping, doing something. That's how he did it. You want to know how he did it? Ask him, because that's how he did it. And that's the truth of the matter. You know, how could we ever find a room that will do for you what this room does for us? How would you like to go to Rotary and sit down and say, I'm an alcoholic, I'm glad to be here? They'd all leave. They would say, shit, I don't hang around with drunks. Guess what? Neither do we. We don't do anything that harms anyone intentionally. Because we don't have to do that anymore. We don't have to do that anymore. Hey, you know, as our good friend Buzz says, that when he was out there drinking, he would call his wife from McDonald's and say he was at Burger King. Because he didn't want to tell the truth. You get stuck in that, you know. Telling the truth is a very bad thing. They start to expect you to tell the truth all the time. And that's not quite in our makeup, you know. Our makeup is being a con. Now that is a gracious way to say you're lying. But you got to have the con. We wouldn't have made it here, you see, if we didn't have the con. Because people would have disposed of us. They would have disposed of us because they didn't want to be with the person we were. So we gave them the con. Gotta have the con. And it worked for us. You see where we are today? Where we are today is that we didn't have a drink today. Ain't that nice? I think it's nice. I come from a home that had no alcoholics in it. That's why I've always not quite accepted the having the preemptive tense of becoming a drunk. I made myself drunk. You know how I did that? Drinking. That's just the way I did it. And it was a hell of a lot of fun. Are you kidding? It was a hell of a lot of fun. My home life was magnificent. I had the greatest childhood a kid could have. Really and truly. My mother was aware that I was a perfect child. And she was the most intelligent lady I ever knew, because she knew that. Now, she didn't live long enough to teach this to my wife. And I've always been sorry about that, because that girl that I've been married to for 112 years should certainly have known how I got to be as wonderful as I am without genuflecting in front of me. I told her none of that. But anyhow, I didn't, I just had a great time. I mean, I can't tell you how I had a great time, a day at a time, but I had a great time. Went through high school, I had a great time. Had a great time. Forgot to study. It's one thing I did. I forgot that. I forgot that. I finally got off of probation in college, and I quit. And that took about 3 years. But they were very important then at that time, you see. Well, when I started drinking like everybody did. Everybody in a room started drinking at 15. 15 is a magic number. Not in a daily drinking, but that's when I found out that you were supposed to drink liquor, and you were supposed to get drunk, and you were supposed to fall down or get knocked down. Any one of those. But you didn't take a drink. Now, I don't know anybody in this room that ever went out with their pals and had a drink. I mean, you want to get slammed, yeah, I'd go out with you. But if you wanted to have a drink and go home, I didn't even know that you could do that. I mean, alcohol is made to get drunk. That's what it is. Were I to drink tomorrow, I would get drunk. And it has nothing to do with anything except that I would get drunk. And I know that. And anyhow, in my late teens, I was hanging around with the kids a little older than I, because I liked them, you know, the big shots. I always wanted to be a big shot. Always, my whole life. And I was hanging around with those guys because they could throw me around the parking lot at Kelly's. And Kelly's had cinders in there when I went there. And they could throw me around there. And I thought, gee, aren't those guys nice? They must love me the way they whack me around. Well, you can believe anything when you're drunk. You know, coming in from Kelly's on a running board. You know, I had a car with a running board. There was no car. And I'd say, I'm too drunk to drive. Let me ride on a running board. And I put my arm in the window. And they thought that was a lot of fun. I thought they were going to drop me off. But anyhow, I wouldn't have cared because I was drunk. And that was all part of it. And after high school, I went in the Navy. Let me tell you something. You want a drink, pal? That's where you gotta go. If any of your children say they want to go in the Navy, tell them we got a seat for you when you get out. Hey, and you know, I always didn't look like this. You know, when I was in the Navy, man, I had on them tight pants, 13 buttons. Huh? You kidding? I was hot. And you only kept four buttons buttoned because you could get in there easy. You didn't want to unbutton 13 of them. Man, The broad might have gone home. Anyhow, I have to tell you that a half a pint of whiskey went right in the pants. Perfect. And they were so tight that it couldn't fall out. And so you would have your sailor cap down here like this, and you'd have those tight pants on, and you'd pull out that half pint of bourbon or whatever and drink it. Not with, I didn't even use a brown bag. Just like this, you know. I remember one time I'm in Philadelphia on Broad Street, and I'm sitting on a stoop of a, what does that guy call him, a bodega, you know, and I couldn't hit my butt with either hand. And these two ladies was walking right by there, and there was a soldier and a Marine coming down, and they were a little drunk. And the one lady says, "Look at those kids. They're all drunk." "Yeah, but," she says, "isn't that sailor cute?" Hey, that's the way it went. Now, as long as some broad's calling you cute, man, you got to be doing the right thing. It was those guys that didn't understand. Every time I said to them that I was going to do something to their wife, they'd hit me. Now, I don't know why they would do that. I'm a hell of a guy. You know, I probably wouldn't have done it anyhow. Or probably couldn't have done it anyhow. But whichever counts. But anyhow, now I'm drinking good. I'm really drinking good. And then I would hitchhike home so that I could see my girlfriend, the one I've been married to for 112 years. She was my girlfriend. And I would come home and impose myself on her on a weekend because I didn't have any money and she had a job. So we would go out and I would get drunk and somebody would whack me again. But that was my life. And I'd hitchhike home almost every weekend. Not my mother said to the lady next door, I heard her. She said, "You know, I don't think they pay Tommy in the Navy. Because when he comes home, he always wants some money." Well, what the hell? I was her baby boy. I deserved it. I never had to steal from her. She'd give me anything I wanted. But anyhow, I'm having a hell of a time. I mean, I'm having a great time. And you could not have a party, nor could anyone else have a party, if I wasn't there. Because they did not know how to party. Now, we had a party one time in our house, and I was drinking. And I inadvertently tore down the curtains. Now, you want to know what? We have never had a party again. My wife said, "I have to invite you." And I'm not taking a chance. So I said, "Okay, I'll go find my own part." I remember one night I came home about 10 o'clock and she was scrubbing the floor. I got in a fight with her. I said, what do you mean by scrubbing the floor when I just come home? I wanted to have conversation. I'm going. And she said some things that were very indicative of going. And so I went, and I got to Peach and Cherry. There was a diner there then, and there was a phone booth. And it was a dime, all right? So I put the dime in the phone, and I called her up. And I said, "If you tell me you're sorry, I will come home." She says, "I am sorry I met you. I am sorry I married you. And I'm sorry I had your kids." And you know what I said? I heard you say I'm sorry, I'm on my way. So anyhow, we're going pretty good. We're going pretty good, and we would go to a lot of dances at Waldemere. You young folks won't remember those, but man, they were fun. Because there were always about 600 or 700 people could see me drunk. And see, I was not a private drinker. I drank out because I wanted everybody to know that I was a drunk. And I didn't miss many people because my brother is a doctor. He's, well, you know, doctors are doctors, you know. They know everything, right? Am I right? Anyhow, he used to ask me things like, after I was gone for like 3 days, he'd say, "Why do you drink?" I said, "Because." "What do you mean?" "Because when I came in here, everybody in here drank because I understood everybody and they understood me. I drank because." It wasn't in any book that he could figure out. So he is my very dear friend now, though. But anyhow, I parked my car where by the professional building. And that's 17th and State Street. Now, I have to tell you that there's a myriad of places that you can be there. They can't catch up with you. There's no way they can catch up with you there, because there's at least 10 bars in the vicinity, you know. And that was good. I can remember one night, I used to love to go to Martin's Steam Bath. Now, there's a couple of you in here that may know that place. Been closed for years. But they had a great steam bath in there. They had oak leaves they would rub you with and all that stuff. And they served beer in there and whiskey. So I would get a massage from this guy, one of the Martin boys, and he would give me shots and beers. But I went in there to get that whiskey. Remember how you'd say, "I'm going to get the whiskey out. I'm going to, you know, I'll go to a sauna or someplace, and I'll steam out all that booze, and I'll be good then. I'll be good, and I can start all over." So I went in there. And it was unbelievable, but I used to come out of there drunker than when I went in. And here's what I said: those steam baths don't do me any good. Anyhow, and during this time we're having babies, and we're having babies and babies and babies and babies and babies. And babies, until my wife found out what caused it. Bingo! All over. And I want you to know this, our youngest child is 40. All right? Now, you know I ain't 45. So that's my life. But anyhow, we were still having this great time. And so help me God, it was fantastic. And I loved what I was doing. And then I got a job. I had a business. Yeah, let me tell you that. I had a business on Peach Street. And, you know, a big shot like me finds out my name is on the sign. There you are. I made it. Everybody that drives their car down Peach Street got to look at my sign. And they say things like, "I wonder how that guy is." The Lawrence Hotel was across the street. And it was terrific. And at the end of the bar went that way. There was a door there. And it went right out to my store. And I'd be sitting in there. I'm buying everybody a drink, you know, get the statue in the park, get everybody, because I'm a big shot. I used to love to say, I used to love to say, wing the bar. Wing the bar, get everybody. Because I'm a big shot. They'd say, how's your business doing, Tom? And I'd look out the window, I says, doing great. Get everybody a drink. Now what happened to that first store was that I forgot something. I forgot that all the money in the drawer wasn't mine. I mean, it was my cash register in my store, so the money should have all been mine, right? Well, the suppliers didn't think that way, and I couldn't understand that, but they didn't. So that store lasted about 5 years. And there are too many great stories to tell you about that place. But anyhow, I went now. Remember, I was in the Navy? Well, I became a traveling road salesman. You know, the guy walks up to the farmer's house, says, is your daughter home? Anyhow, I'm a traveling salesman in eastern Pennsylvania. Now, I will tell you that when I was at home, I used to have no problem. I would buy everybody a drink, then I'd say to the bartender, put it on the arm. Okay, say, put it on the arm. I'd get it on the arm. He knew all about that. Put it on the arm. So anyhow, I went out to eastern Pennsylvania, and this joint was pretty packed, and I told the guy to give us all a drink, and he said to me, I never forget it, he said to me, that's $27. I said, put it on the arm. Oh, he said things about my parents not being married, and he said all kinds of bad things about my heritage and me. I said, what's the matter with you? It's only $27. He said, oh, I don't have to tell you what he said to me. I really don't. You can imagine what he said to me. So I decided at that point that I was no longer going to hang out in those establishments. They did not appreciate me out of town. So I started to buy a jug and keep it in my motel room. And I would always take a nap around 7 o'clock and wake up at 11 and call my wife and tell her what a rough time I was having, how good it was for her. She had either 6 or 7 kids then, and she didn't quite agree with me. She suggested that I come home and stay with the kids with no money and no car. And she'll come out and do that. Well, I worked at this job very hard. I really did. I worked every day from 11 to 1. And I'm telling you, it was hard work. It was hard work. And then I would go home and I would bring out the scotch bottle and I would start drinking. And I've never had a blackout in my drinking career. Never. Never once did I have a blackout. I would take naps. Because if you had blackouts, you were a drunk. And of course I wasn't a drunk. I just got a little tired. This is verifiable, too, by Barry Grossman, because I fell asleep on a railroad tracks on 13th and Cascade. And he was behind me, and he came up and knocked at the window. What's the matter? What's the matter? You're on the railroad tracks. How dare a train strike me? So anyhow, it's all going along like this. You know, with all of this good fun and all of these parties and all this stuff is wonderful. It's just wonderful. And, I'm bringing my car home and parking it in my next-door neighbor's front yard. I just missed the driveway by, like, about like that. Now, of course, my kids got to go to school, you know, every day. They would walk down and meet their friends because there were a bunch of kids in our neighborhood. And you can imagine those guys saying, "Ah, Carly's old man got drunk again." That must have been nice for them. Huh? I hope they forgive me. If they don't, you people have. Anyhow, now what's happening is that I ain't having so much fun anymore. Something's wrong here. And I was not happy, and I would wake up at the dock, you know, looking at the water. I don't know what the hell I did that for. I wouldn't have never driven in there. The water's terrible. But anyhow, things weren't going that good. And I was just having a really bad time. And I did not know what to do about it. I got another store right after that. That other one went down. I got another one that was 20 times bigger. And so I said to this is where we start getting in trouble. I said to, now my wife said, "Are you going to drink now?" I said, "No, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop at the Manicor after work and have one drink. Get a customer, and I'll come home." Okay, she agreed with that. Huh? Imagine that. That's called the con. So I went in there, and I would have one Manhattan, or one martini. So the next day, I went in there, and I said, "You know, now, you can only have one." So that went on for 3 days. And then I realized that if you had two martinis, you could get two customers. I mean, that sounds good, doesn't it? And then, think about it, three customers. Four, I'd tell all the customers to go to hell, I didn't like them anyhow. But I lasted 3 days. 3 days was my time. That was when I would burn all the alcohol out of my system. I could last 3 days. I went to my brother's house right around then to a party on a Sunday. My brother did not invite me to many parties at his house. He had all those doctor pals of his and all that stuff. You know, those guys that would take a drink. Imagine that. I knew some of them didn't take a drink. I knew some took more. But there were a lot of guys there that took a drink. So I went the whole day. I didn't have a drink. Around 5 o'clock, I said to my wife, "Now you see how good I've been?" She says, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I think I'll have a stinger." Now that's great. Now that's good stuff. You know, you can only drink about 20 of them in a row. I remember one night we went out to that, out in the woods, like to a church party, St. Boniface. And on the way home, there was, what was the name? It was that guy who changed so many times. It was George's Boardwalk, something like that. Huh? A name like that. And I can remember going in there and I said, to the guy, "Give me a couple of bottles of those whiskeys, and I'll make my own drinks because you're too busy here, and I'll give you a fair count." That's true, and he did. And I gave him a fair count. You'd never screwed with the bartender or the bookie. You got to pay them. Forget the electric bill. Forget the mortgage payment. But you got to pay the bartender and the bookie, because they are important in your life. So anyhow, all this stuff is going on like this, but I'm starting to be alone. For some ungodly reason, most of these guys that I was drinking with, they didn't want to drink with me anymore. I couldn't understand that. I'm a hell of a guy. I'm fun. I'm terrific. But they were avoiding me. Okay, I don't care. So anyhow, it's going along like that, and I'm parking by myself, and I'm crying a lot, and I'm, you know, pulling the covers up over my head because I think maybe the demons will go away if you hide. Well, they didn't go away, and so now I'm unhappy, and I'm a happy guy, and I'm a pleasant guy. I'm a wonderful person when I don't drink. But when I drink, I'm a pain in the ass. Now, I'll tell you exactly. Everybody comes in here for another reason, one reason or the other. I came in here because I did not want to call and apologize anymore. Every time I went out from this time on, I got drunk and I got loud and I got boisterous and I got profane, and they didn't want to hear it. I was all alone now. And boy, is that bad for a guy like me. That's like they cut your legs off, because I wanted everybody to love me. I was a really nice guy. And I wanted everything to be nice. But when I drank, I wasn't nice. Now, you would think that you would make that out and decide. But I had to have buildings fall on me and stuff like that. And I got this new store, and after the first 3 days, then I was, you know, on a roll then. And about 8:30 or so, I would call my wife up and I would say, I did it again. I didn't want to get drunk. Honest to God, I didn't want to get drunk. Except that, honest to God, I did want to get drunk. That's a quandary. You want to get drunk and have all this fun, but you get drunk and you get all this trouble. That's a quandary. What do you do? I didn't know what to do. I certainly was not an alcoholic. I had a suit on and a tie and a nice car. How could I be? Well, there was this kid that I'd known since he was a young boy. And he was hanging around in these church basements and stuff. And when I used to see him years before, he used to call me at like 2 or 3 in the morning. Now, you know what kind of calls you get at 2 or 3 in the morning, don't you? Somebody on one end is drunk. And he'd call me and he'd say, hey, I'm tapped. I need about a double saw. And I'd say, where are you at? He would say, so-and-so. I'd say, put him on the phone. Get on the phone, I'd say, put him on the arm, I'll be down to pay it tomorrow. He didn't want that. He had some other place he wanted to go, and he didn't think I could get the arm at the other place. But anyhow, he would come in and talk to me. But I used to have all the time in the world for this guy. But he came in now, and I would say to him, hey, how you doing? I got to go. Let me know if they got a seat in there for me in that joint you're hanging around in. Oh, yeah, he'd say, okay, and he'd leave. So anyhow, I think we've had enough experiences. This one is for the end. Anyhow, I had to deliver. I'd smashed up my car. My friend Pete Otis would never have had to go to jail had I kept drinking, because I was doing front ends like 3 a week. But when I left my brother's house that night, I backed into. I knew I was in trouble when I backed into a tree. I was okay as long as I was hitting fronts. You remember when you first came in the program and you're here about a week or 2 weeks or something, and you go to the country fair and you look at the guy's car that's parked there and you see all the dinks and bits and all that in the front, you say, man, does that guy need the program? We can fix all those dents. It's funny though. Truly is. Anyhow, I backed in and I had to get a new back end. That's when that is when, on the next day, my brother, whose home I was at, called me and he said, I will never, ever in my life speak to you again. And nobody that I know will speak to you again. I said, well, that's up to you, pal. I was still drinking, what the hell did I care? So I sold this guy a suit, and I was going to deliver it to his house. It was a Thursday night during Christmas, so we were open till 9. And my wife said to me, do not deliver that suit to that man's house. And I said, why? She said, because they drink. I said, well, I don't drink. It has been now since Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm perfect. So I take the guy's suit and I put it in a car, in a loaner from Otis, because my car's in his thing. Imagine that. He used to give me loaners. I used to hit fences coming. But he was drunker than I was. So anyhow, God rest his soul. But anyhow, I got the suit, and I'm going out 12th Street. And I got the window open. This is December. And I'm out the window like this. You know how, remember, you used to drive that way? You roll down the window, because that wakes you right up. You know, your eyes go, oh, I'm okay now. I'm all right now. Now, I'm going out 12th Street, and I'm going out 12th Street, and I get to 12th and Cherry, and here a traffic cop comes up to me in a motorcycle, our pal, Pat. Anyhow, I said to him, how you doing, Pat? He says, are you drinking? I said, I haven't had a drink in forever. I don't drink anymore. Well, why the hell did you go through the red light on Myrtle Street? Well, you know, I wanted to make sure I get there. Because they drink, but I don't, and I wanted to tell them so, right? So I got to the guy's house. I take the suit up to the door. He says, hey, Tom, come on in, have a drink. I said, I don't drink. And he said, well, just one. I said, okay. Now, he told me years later that I ate a steak while I was there. And that's because I was taking naps, standing up now. Now, he gave me a bottle of Tanqueray to take with me. It's Christmas time. And the suit he gave me, too, because it didn't fit. And I said, okay. So now I come in 26th Street, and the first bar I hit, what is the name of that place on Powell Avenue? Eduardo's. Now I reached into my pocket, and I had some money. on that shit, you can't go home with money. You gotta get rid of the money. Get rid of the money, because the bride that lives in the house is going to expect you to come home with money all the time if she finds money. So how could you be drinking when you don't have any money? So you had to get rid of the money. So I went in there, and another guy that's been in the program for many, many years was behind the plank at Eduardo's. He wasn't with us then. And I walked in, and I said, let's get this guy a drink, and that guy a drink, and that one a drink, you know. And then I said to him, I gave him $5, and I says, where's the phone? He says, right there, next to me. I says, get this guy on the phone for me. So he got the guy on the phone. I said, listen, you got room in that program for me? He says, yeah, we have a seat for you. He didn't say anything rash, like he's been keeping it for me, as though he knew what was going to happen to me. But anyhow, I got him on the phone, and I said, I'm considering joining. He says, where are you? And I said, no. You think I'm going to tell a guy that don't drink and hangs around in church basements where I am? He's going to come and get me. And I still had a few bucks left. I had to get rid of that. So anyhow, I went back to drinking, because there was a couple people in there that I hadn't insulted yet, and I wanted to buy a few more drinks and insult them, and then I would maybe go. And I'm standing there now. I'm pretty drunk now, and I say, give him $5, and said to him, where's the phone? He says, it's right there. So I called this guy up, and the guy says to me, where the hell are you? We got coffee on and everything's ready, and we were doing Todd. I said, listen, Todd, you got a hat? He says, yeah. I said, take a crap in it. I ain't coming to that white-coated party that you guys were holding. There was no way. So now, I got done with all my insulting, and I'm broke now. It's okay to go home. So I went in 26th Street, and I got to the Kmart there. You know where there's that island there? Well, I was going to go up Zook Road up here, but I turned a little early. And I went up on the island at the Kmart. Oh, I was sitting there, you know, running the motor trying to get off the island, and the car's going like this. So anyhow, I left the car there, and I got out, and I walked up the street, and then I remembered the suit was in the car, but that wasn't what I wanted. The jug of Tanqueray. That's what I went back, I got the jug, left the suit there, left the car there, and I went into the Dorme Motel. I either went in there by myself or with the newspaper, because I would invite young ladies to go there with me, but they would determine that this wasn't quite the thing to do, because I couldn't stand. So anyhow, I walked in there, and I'm walking through, and I see a blue and white car out there, your father's partner. I look at it out the door. I walk up to the car. I open up the door. I get in. I said, take me home. He said, okay. He was a good kid. He was in your class. Anyhow, I got home. Now, for some reason, I didn't go to work the next day. And I was sitting in the kitchen with the T-shirt on. And it was okay when the kids were at school, because I wasn't talking to she, and she wasn't talking to me. I would get snotty answers every time I talked to her. Okay, if you want to be that way, it's all right with me. What the heck? I was just having a little fun. So anyhow, about 6 o'clock, my wife answers the door. She says, "Oh, Todd." You know, and he comes in with the roses and the smiling and the, "Ha, ha, ha, how's you doing? You, how are you doing? You know how I'm doing. Ha, ha, ha. You know, everything's going to be wonderful. Oh, yeah. Everything's going to be just great. My wife just served me dinner like this. Bam, bam. Will you have a little bit more of this?" I was afraid she could get her hand on a silverware. She would have stabbed me. But anyhow, I'm sitting there, and I'm being very quiet, and I'm being very remorseful. And Todd says to me, "What do you say we go to a meeting?" And I said, "Todd, I'll never get out tonight." And my wife says to Todd, "Todd, how long has it been since you've had a drink?" And he said, "4 years." She said, "Do not, under any circumstances, leave this house with that man. Don't do it, because I promise you, by the time you get to the corner, you'll be drunk." And I said, "There's no bars." She said, "I don't care. You are a bad influence on the world. Not just on one." So Todd says, "I'll take a chance." So he took me over to Perkins Church. This is Friday now. And he said to me, now in those days, what they did is whomever was sponsoring you, I guess he became my sponsor, he never agreed to it. But anyhow, the sponsor got up and he said, "I want to introduce Tom to the program." You get up and you go like that, because you were not allowed to speak. He told me, "I want you to sit there and I want you to shut up and I want you to listen. And when you get tired of that, I want you to sit there and shut up and listen. And when you get tired of that, I want you to sit there and shut up and listen." I got my hands on him. I said, "Yes, sir, yes, sir." You know, I thought they'd beat the shit out of you if you didn't say that. What did I know? So anyhow, he said, "For a year." You imagine that to me. For a year, you're not allowed to speak. For a year, you weren't allowed to go to a round robin meeting because you had nothing to add. That's the truth. They were great days. They were great days. Now, you know, I don't have to tell you what's happened. You've been with me. You've seen what's happened. You know, this is 44 years later. And I'm happy. I'm very happy. I am almost at the point where I am becoming proud of myself. I ain't there yet, because remember, all drunks are bad. All drunks are very, very bad. They don't want anybody but God to know about how they really are. They don't wish to share it with anybody because you're so ashamed. And guess what? We're only drunks. We ain't bad. You know, everybody, will say, my brother-in-law's a bad drunk. Ain't no bad drunks. They're simply and purely drunks. And when drunks get drunk, then they get bad. But you know, my life has been as it was when I was a child. I had a great, wonderful childhood. I had a great teenage time. And here I am, an old fart, and I'm having a great time. More than a great time. I can't express to you how proud I am to know your people. You darling, I love you so much that you'll never know, never possibly know how much I love you. And I'm proud of you. You're great. You are an inspiration to us all. You are an inspiration to us all. Well, anyhow, things are going pretty good and I'm doing okay. And I run into this guy, he's got twin boys. They're about 5 years old. And one of the kids is an optimist and the other one's a pessimist. So the father says to the psychiatrist, let's work on these kids. See if we can get them straightened out to even. I said, okay, so they worked with the kids for about 6 months and they decide to take them out. So they take out the pessimist kid. And they say, they take him to Waldemar and say, go on all the rides, have a good time all day, do whatever you want. He says, oh, I don't think I'd do that. I get sick to my stomach and all that stuff. But he says, I don't think I should do that. So they take him to the ice cream store and they say, you can have all the ice cream and candy that you want. Go ahead. Oh, no, I'd throw up then and I can't do that. So they take him to the bicycle store and they say to the kid, here, go in and get yourself roller skates, a bicycle, whatever you want. He says, no, I'll fall down and skin my elbow and hurt my head and all that stuff. I don't think I should do that. So the old man looks at the psychiatrist and he looks at the old man and he says, well, let's try the other kid, the optimist. So they take a room about this size and they fill it up about that deep with horseshit. And they put the kid in there. And the kid is in there going nuts, digging around. And the psychiatrist says to the kid, what are you doing? He says, listen, with all this horseshit in there, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere. Now you see what you're looking for? You see what you're looking for? When you dig around in AA, I guarantee you, and I only lie to my wife, I guarantee you that there's a pony in here somewhere. And each and every one of you deserve it. You don't think so all the time, but I wouldn't lie to you. Thank you.